I have a suspicion that the "We Love Latinos" message was not the only statement the Biden controllers were trying to make with this Cesar Chavez statue. Chavez studied the ideas of Machiavelli, Adolf Hitler, and Mao Zedong. He was a first-class authoritarian, and they knew exactly the message that they were trying to send. Authoritarianism is a good thing.
The radical left redesign of the Oval Office.
Mr. Reagan.
So, Joe Biden revealed a new skill the other day. Interior decorating. The man is truly a master of all trades. The Washington Post printed an article about this entitled, "Biden's Cesar Chavez bust in the Oval Office signals a new era for Latinos. Activists hope it shows that he's authentic." When I read this, I literally laughed out loud. It shows that he's authentic, really. But the redecoration of the Oval Office gives us an opportunity to explore something here. How much control does Joe Biden actually have over the presidency? Now, I believe that the redecoration of the Oval Office, as insignificant as it may seem, is a perfect example of just how much control Joe Biden has over his own presidency. Because how much stuff in that office do you think was chosen by Joe Biden personally? Precisely zero. Every little thing in that office was a calculation by a Democrat operative. Every statue, painting, book, pen, letter opener, throw pillow, every dust bunny was chosen very intentionally in order to express some idiotic left-wing message. Remember, everything about Democrats is political theater. Nothing is genuine. Nothing is authentic, as the Washington Post would have you believe. There is no charming model of a Corvette, Biden's favorite car. There is no golden fist to illustrate Joe Biden's intention to keep punching at the issue of domestic violence.
No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman. And so we have to just change the culture and keep punching at it and punching at it and punching at it. It's a gigantic issue.
There are no little touches of Joe Biden, nothing in that office to make it his own. There are no symbols of anteaters to signify Joe's love of sniffing things. Huh, Joe Biden likes sniffing things, and Hunter Biden also loves sniffing things. Must be something that runs in the family. I'm talking about drugs, ladies and gentlemen. Hunter Biden likes to sniff drugs. All right, but let's get back to being a little bit more serious here. There are no little touches of Joe Biden, nothing in the office to make it his own, because it's not his own. It's the office of the people now, the People's Republic of America. Welcome to socialism, ladies and gentlemen. We no longer have a president. We have a puppet dictator, and the meticulously calculated decor of his Oval Office illustrates that perfectly. Some of the design choices send very clear and sometimes alarming messages. Biden's people removed a bust of Winston Churchill just as Barack Obama did. Now, some people are saying that this is an offense to the UK. It's sort of like a dig or a slight to England, or, you know. But I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think that Biden is perfectly willing to have a good relationship with the UK. But the problem with Winston Churchill, and it really is a problem, is that he was a great leader. He's considered a great leader by just about everyone around the world. He was a great man, a great leader, and he was a conservative. And having the image of a great leader who's also a conservative and a strong conservative in that Oval Office, in anywhere in the White House, that's problematic for a Democrat. You know, they can't have you believing that a conservative could possibly be a great man. It's petty and it's weak and it's sad. But that's the truth. But I'd like to pivot for a moment because I want to talk again about that bust of Cesar Chavez. This statue, right, has been placed in a very prominent position in the Oval Office. It's right behind Joe Biden's desk with the pictures of his family, pictures that Biden also didn't pick, I guarantee. So, man, this bust of Chavez, this is a statement. This is a message that Biden's operators really wanted to broadcast loudly. This is a message that says, we love Latinos. And why? Why does the left love Latinos so much? Well, considering that Biden has promised to give amnesty to 11 million illegal aliens, we can rightly assume that they're courting the Hispanic vote, and particularly the Hispanic immigrant vote. And if you want Hispanic immigrants to vote for you, having a bust of a popular Hispanic American hero, well, that seems like you really like Hispanics. You really care about them. It's almost as good as eating a taco bowl from your favorite Mexican restaurant. But here's the irony. Although Biden's handlers are trying to indicate that they love the immigrant Hispanic population with a bust of Cesar Chavez, actually, Cesar Chavez openly hated Hispanic immigrants. No joke. You see, the thing is, Chavez had a goal to increase the wages of Mexican-American farm laborers in the American Southwest. And Cesar Chavez understood that as illegal immigrants would sneak over the border and offer cheap labor to the farmers throughout California and Arizona, the men that he represented could not demand higher wages. Their bargaining power was reduced as the supply of cheap labor increased. Chavez was trying to help the Mexican-Americans who were already here, the citizens. He knew that he needed to keep out the illegal aliens. This is precisely the argument that Republicans make today. However, Cesar Chavez took a much more sinister approach to solving this problem than we do. Cesar Chavez sent his union laborers down to the border between the US and Mexico to physically assault anyone trying to cross the border illegally. That's not a joke, that's real life history. They call these lines of laborers wet lines, because those emerging from the Rio Grande would naturally come across soaking wet. Chavez's men would literally beat illegal immigrants to keep them from coming over the border. No joke. Cesar Chavez really hated illegal immigrants. Really good statue to have in your office there, Joe Biden. Way to tell Hispanic immigrants just how much you love them. But actually, it gets worse. Oh, it gets a lot worse. Cesar Chavez was not merely a union organizer. The man was, no question about it, a cult leader. Chavez convinced a wealthy Hollywood movie producer, Edward Lewis, to buy him an abandoned sanatorium, and he used that as his commune. Chavez called this commune La Paz. La Paz was patrolled by armed guards, and the union members who stayed at La Paz were required to wear their UFC union pins at all times, or else they would be fined. On Saturdays, residents of La Paz were forced to work in the vegetable gardens to improve sociability. And Chavez eventually began claiming that he could heal people with his touch. Cesar Chavez was a great admirer of a cult leader by the name of Charles Diederich.
When a person comes in to sit on, we have then a person that is looking for boundaries. He then is looking for someone to tell him what to do, isn't he?
I'm quite convinced that he actually knows more about me than I know about myself.
Diederich had begun a cult called Synanon, and he devised a twisted brainwashing exercise to control the members of his Synanon cult. He called this brainwashing technique the game. The game consisted of one person surrounded by the whole rest of the cult. And this one person would speak about themselves, and as they did so, all the other members of the cult would brutally criticize them. They'd scream at them the most foul, vulgar, you know, harshest things they could imagine. They were being as cruel as possible, all in order to get this person to break so that they would endure a kind of a trauma. And then after this, the subject would be welcomed lovingly back into the group, hugs all around. And it was a way of dehumanizing a person, right? The subject is worthless, but the group loves them anyway. They're not individually important, but that doesn't matter because the group is important, and they're important because they're a part of that group. It was effective. According to Charles Diederich, he was able to control the cult members, and through this game, he was able to force women to have abortions, men to have vasectomies, and members of his cult to commit acts of violence for him. And actually, everybody in the cult had to, if I remember correctly, had to shave their heads. I did a lot of research about this cult and about Cesar Chavez because they have a loose connection somehow to AOC, how that was all sorted out. I don't remember exactly what the connection was, but there's a connection there. Variations of this humiliation brainwashing technique, the game, was used by many cults in the 1960s, and it's still being used today, or it's kind of a variation on it, is being used today by Scientologists. Cesar Chavez loved the game. And he ended up implementing it as part of his labor union organizing. For real. He called it a good tool to fine-tune the union. Chavez needed his union members to be loyal, and the game was used to shape behavior and punish nonconformity. I mean, essentially, Chavez was trying to turn his labor union into a cult. He wanted to be like a cult leader. Now, naturally, many of Chavez's companions, including his own wife, thought this was insane, and they refused to participate. And Chavez then became paranoid, as, you know, cult leaders tend to do. He saw enemies everywhere, and he lashed out irrationally. And eventually, he started using his power to corruptly enrich himself. His cousin, Manuel, founded a melon farm in Mexico, and he was exploiting Chavez's union for his own benefit. What would happen was the unions in America would strike, American farms would then be shut down, and there would be increased demand for produce coming out of Mexico. And I couldn't figure out whether Cesar Chavez was involved in this directly or not, but as this was his cousin's farm, I'm guessing that he was. The most likely scenario was that this was Cesar Chavez's own scheme and that the cousin was merely the man that Cesar Chavez used to implement that scheme. That's my guess. Corrupt union leaders. Shocking, I know. But despite all of this, Cesar Chavez is inexplicably regarded as a kind of folk hero by many. He's idolized, and he's even been described as a saint by his supporters. And that is, of course, why Biden's handlers had the Cesar Chavez bust installed. Cesar Chavez was simply the most prominent Hispanic American that they could find. So what better way is there to say we love Latinos? And, you know, Cesar Chavez was a prominent leftist, too. And he was a labor leader. I mean, perfect, right? But this may not have been the only reason that the bust is there. I have a suspicion that the We Love Latinos message was not the only statement the Biden controllers were trying to make with this Cesar Chavez statue. You see, Cesar Chavez supported authoritarianism. That was his leadership style. According to a biography on Chavez by Miriam Powell, Chavez studied the ideas of Machiavelli, Adolf Hitler, and Mao Zedong. He even opened a June 1978 board meeting by reciting a poem by Chairman Mao. Cesar Chavez never ran a country, but he was a union boss, and he was a cult leader. And as such, he was a first-class authoritarian. Those who installed his statue in the Oval Office maybe didn't know that. Maybe they just naively thought Latino hero, good enough. But I doubt it. More likely, they knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew exactly the message that they were trying to send. Authoritarianism is a good thing. Biden's controllers have also got statues of MLK and JFK set up in the Oval Office now. And just for good measure, they brought in a bust of civil rights hero Rosa Parks. I mean, this is as low-hanging fruit as you can get. MLK, JFK, Rosa Parks. If you want to make Democrats happy, you know, these are three easy choices. But MLK should be a little problematic for the progressive Democrats controlling Joe Biden. Because you see, MLK was a Republican. There's a lot of debate about that. I mean, he certainly worked with both parties, but Richard Nixon and MLK were, in fact, very close friends. Few give Nixon any credit for the achievements of the civil rights movement, but Nixon was indeed a key contributor. And Martin Luther King Jr. would certainly not fit in with the Democrat Party today. In 1958, Martin Luther King wrote a column in Ebony Magazine in which he responded to a boy who wrote him the following: "I'm a boy, but I feel about boys the way I ought to feel about girls. I don't want my parents to know about me. What can I do?" King responded, "The type of feeling that you have toward boys is probably not an innate tendency, but something that has been culturally acquired. You're already on the right road toward a solution, since you honestly recognize the problem and have a sincere desire to solve it." What is this? Homosexuality is a problem? Oh no, he didn't. And what's worse, Martin Luther King doesn't believe homosexuality is innate. You mean, he doesn't think all gays are, quote, born that way? Lady Gaga must be horrified at this monster. The nature of the Democrat Party today is to demonize, to cancel anyone alive or even anyone from history who does not abide precisely by their insane ideology. And Martin Luther King Jr. fits squarely into that group of problematic persons who do not agree with the current radical left ideology. So maybe that particular statue has got to go. There's also a bust of Eleanor Roosevelt in there. Eleanor Roosevelt is, of course, a first lady. I know feminists love her, which is obviously why she was included, but I mean, it's a silly inclusion. She's a first lady. That said, the Democrats are really digging their first ladies lately. One of them was even nominated as the Democrat contender for president a few years back. That would be Hillary Clinton. Eleanor's husband, Franklin Delano, he has the largest portrait in the office, and this makes sense as he is arguably the father of the modern left in America. The Biden handlers also installed a statue of the statesman Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster has been noted as one of the greatest orators in American history. One of his speeches, his reply to Hayne, was regarded as the most eloquent speech ever delivered in Congress.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing.
Maybe Biden believes that by having the statue in his Oval Office, some of Daniel Webster's oratory powers will magically be imbued into him. I don't know. The truth is, as I said before, none of this was Biden's choice. This is the work of Biden's handlers. The room has been transformed from the office of the president into an altar of the gods of the civil rights movement. And look, I'm cool with a bust of MLK in there. Donald Trump displayed a bust of MLK in his Oval Office. But MLK, Rosa Parks, Cesar Chavez, the Democrats really want you to know that they're really super not racist. Somebody has clearly never heard the expression trying too hard. The truth is, Biden doesn't know who most of these people even are. I'll give him Benjamin Franklin. Biden grew up in Pennsylvania, so he probably knows who Benjamin Franklin is. When I originally saw that portrait there, I actually gave Biden credit. I thought maybe Joe Biden picked that one. Maybe he likes Benjamin Franklin for some reason. I don't know. But then I read about why it was there. Apparently, it's supposed to represent Biden's respect for science in contrast to Trump's supposed rejection of science. So it's a very intentional dig at Donald Trump and something that Biden did not choose at all. Like everything else in the room, it's a calculated bit of decor. But the other busts, the other portraits, I doubt Biden could even identify Rosa Parks in a picture. Eleanor Roosevelt? He probably thinks it's a bust of one of his grandparents. And Cesar Chavez? Come on, man. He has no idea who that is. You mention the name Cesar Chavez, Joe Biden thinks it's that little cartoon guy that says pizza pizza.
Pizza pizza.
The deputy director of Oval Office Operations is a woman by the name of Ashley Williams, and she's been quoted as saying, "It was important for President Biden to walk into an oval that looked like America and started to show the landscape of who he was going to be as president." That is an almost incomprehensible word salad, but I'll try to decode it. Basically, she's saying, we designed this office to be multicultural because that's what we value as Democrats, and we wanted to advertise that fact. Basically, she's acknowledging that this has nothing to do with Biden at all, and it's all about the Democrat vision for the country. To me, this is just more evidence that Biden is not the president. The president is now a conglomerate of various powerful parties negotiating and competing to shape public policy that will benefit them. Biden has merely been installed in order to implement these policies. Now, who are these powerful parties? I'll be delving into that in another video that I shall be posting very soon, so stay tuned for that. Well, that's it for me. And remember, it's not that our liberal friends are ignorant. It's just that they are communists. Good night.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening.
Deep Thoughts with Mr. Reagan. If you actually think Trump incited an insurrection, you're too dumb to vote. Listen to the science, and the science says, as soon as Trump is out of office, coronavirus is no longer a thing. In honor of Chuck Schumer, I think we should all start calling Joe Biden President Erect.
Donald John Trump incited the erection against the United States.
President Erect is, coincidentally, what the Chinese have called him since November.
Fly lies, it is fry rice, you.
Trump had a button in the Oval Office to alert aides to bring him Diet Coke. Biden has had this button removed. Hunter then replaced it with a button for regular Coke. According to every woman I've ever spoken with, the line between slut and non-slut is whatever line they haven't yet crossed. Now that the Democrats control the federal government, gender no longer exists. It's merely a social construct. So Kamala Harris, ironically, is not the first female vice president. Gotta love the irony. After watching old footage of Joe Biden as a young senator, I started thinking he might not be senile after all. He's just always been a moron. Funny how the BLM protests stopped right after the 2020 election. I guess black lives don't matter anymore. For the sake of avoiding bad puns, it's imperative that anyone discussing the COVID vaccine injections avoid responding to a profound insight or an astute observation by saying, "Good point." Leftists sometimes get confused with spelling. It's spelled with an R. Trump supporters are white rationalists. More deep thoughts with Mr. Reagan in one moment. First, I have to sell you something. Wow, Harry Dent just said gold prices will see the strongest boom in history after reset this level. He's predicting $5,000 in a new interview. With gold set to skyrocket, your timing is perfect. Start a qualifying gold IRA or 401k, and Noble Gold are gifting an incredible solid 22-karat American Gold Eagle coin in a beautiful presentation box. And they don't have many of these coins, so this offer ends in January. Call 877-646-5347 and get this special coin offer and get in early. That's 877-646-5347. Make sure to mention me, Mr. Reagan, when you call. One difference between a conservative and a leftist is that the conservative has the ability to look at a group of exclusively white men and not think they're all evil. Joe Biden, first name Joseph. Joseph Stalin, also first name Joseph. Coincidence? I think not. I'm just a mask wearer trapped in a non-mask wearer's body. And if you say I'm not wearing a mask, you're a bigot. I'm just going to say it. I don't think being transphobic is a bad thing.
Excuse me, it's ma'am. It is ma'am.
Sometimes I read through the posts on Twitter and I feel like an old man shaking his head at a bunch of idiot teenagers.
Get off my lawn.
I don't know who needs to hear this, but the gay pride flag is tacky. My family raises a small herd of cattle. In 2020, we got two calves that my mother named COVID and Corona. So when the third one was born, we decided to name him Rig. Spectre was a brilliant name for an evil organization in the James Bond novels. Another brilliant name for an evil organization? Dominion. Most white supremacists probably aren't even white supremacists. They're probably just claiming to be white supremacists to be provocative, to get attention, like lesbians. Hashtag BLM. Biden's laptop matters. Court packing has got to be gay slang for something. You can recover from coronavirus. You can't recover from dementia.
Because I know you all know all of this. But first of all, you know...
Every morning, Valeria wakes me up by saying, "Good morning, Sunday morning." So now I have to wake up thinking about Nancy Pelosi.
Good morning, Sunday morning.
I am shocked that the media lied about Trump again. Said no one ever. Democrats should close their eyes and imagine an America devoid of white racism, but instead infested with racism against white people. It would look a lot like 2020. For the record, the word Kamala in Finnish means horrible. That's not a joke. That's just true. Remember when Joe Biden said, "Poor kids are just as bright as white kids"? That was hilarious. Certain terms changed in 2020. Mostly peaceful now means extremely violent. Woman now means anyone who puts on lipstick. Defund the police now means defund the police, except those police privately guarding the politicians demanding that the police be defunded. Erection now means insurrection.
Incited the erection.
Insurrection now means casually walking through a building. Domestic terrorist now means Trump supporter. Masculinity now means misogyny and must be accompanied by the word toxic. Believe all women now means believe all women. Unless they're accusing Joe Biden of something, then don't believe them. The term sexual preference is now homophobic hate speech. The words mother, father, husband, wife, Grandma, Grandpa, Aunt, Uncle, son, and daughter are all now banned. And the American flag is now a symbol of fascism. Most mainstream media stories I read these days are straight up fantasy fiction. Coronavirus restrictions have saved thousands of Biden supporters from getting their hair sniffed. Well, that's it for me. And remember, it's not that our liberal friends are ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so. Good night.
President Washington began this tradition in 1790 after reminding the nation that the destiny of self-government is finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. For our friends in the press who place a high premium on accuracy, let me say, I did not actually hear George Washington say that.
The ascension of the weakest leader in history.
Mr. Reagan.
In recent days, we've seen a purge on social media. There's been a crackdown, unsanctioned speech in America. So I will not be discussing politics today. Rather, I'm going to be reading for you a short story I wrote. This story is from a series of science fiction stories that I'm going to be reading on this show from time to time, called The Epic of Turth. Now, this story is entitled The Ascension of the Weakest World Leader in History. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there was Turth. Turth was a beautiful planet. It was the third planet from the star Los in the Milky Way galaxy. Turth had just the right conditions for life to flourish, and upon Turth lived many alien races within many Turthly nations. One nation, which was called the Unified States of Mercuria, had just practiced a tradition they called the Great Selection of the Executive. This was their quadrennial ceremony in which they chose the Mercurian leader for the next 4 years. But something was different about the Great Selection this year. Many believed the selection was crooked, that it had been manipulated in some way. You see, within the country of Mercuria, there were two parties, the Freepublicans and the Decepticrats. 4 years previous, the Republicans had won the Great Selection, and the Decepticrats were furious about this. They believed Mercuria was theirs to control, and they would not tolerate the rule of a Republican. The Decepticrats were particularly frustrated because the Republican who won the election was an outsider, someone they did not control, someone who wasn't interested in their political cronyism. This great Republican leader called the wicked gang of corrupt politicians embedded in the country's capital city, the city of Jefferson, D.C. He called them the bog. And when he was selected by the people, he had promised to drain the bog. But these bog dwellers, the Jeffersonian establishment, they absolutely hated this man, and they made up their minds to do everything in their power to drive him from political office, to destroy him. The truth was that this man, the outsider, he was without doubt one of the greatest executives that had ever ruled over Mercuria. His name, Donaldus J. Trumpius. I'll read more from The Ascension of the Weakest World Leader in History from the Epic of Turth in one moment. First, I have to sell you something. Wow, Harry Dent just said gold prices will see the strongest boom in history after reset this level. He's predicting $5,000 in a new interview. With gold set to skyrocket, your timing is perfect. Start a qualifying gold IRA or 401k, and Noble Gold are gifting an incredible solid 22-karat American gold eagle coin in a beautiful presentation box. And they don't have many of these coins, so this offer ends in January. Call 877-646-5347 and get this special coin offer and get in early. That's 877-646-5347. Make sure to mention me, Mr. Reagan, when you call. Welcome back. Let's continue, shall we? The evil Decepticrat bog dwellers hated Mr. Trumpius even more because of his great success as the executive of Mercuria. And so upon the run-up to the next great selection, they developed a nefarious plan. A plan to doctor the results of the great selection in their favor. In a devastating turn of fate, the doctoring of the great selection was, in fact, successful. The mighty Donaldus J. Trumpius was soon to step down from his position as executive over the country. In his stead would sit a curious figure, a man that no one thought could competently rule the nation of Mercuria, a man so weak, intellectually feeble, and uncharismatic that not a single Mercurian was excited to vote for him. Even the most loyal Decepticrat voter lacked any excitement at all about the candidate. This feeble old man was called Bo Jiden. Despite the fact that no one really wanted to vote for Bo Jiden, somehow Mr. Jiden won the great selection. No one could really figure out how this was accomplished. The Decepticrats had used futuristic technology to tally the votes. They used machines called domination tally machines. And many believed that those tally machines had been doctored in favor of the Democrat candidate, Bo Jiden. But nobody really knew. There were countless theories, dozens of red flags, but no smoking gun evidence. And so Decepticrats seemed to get away with their plot. But why Jiden? It seemed odd that the Decepticrats would have chosen such a feeble leader. Well, it makes sense when you consider that the Decepticrats were the most repugnant, evil people in the universe. And they wanted somebody in office who could not stand against them. A pawn, a puppet. They wanted somebody that they could control. But was it really the Decepticrats who wanted an executive that they could control? Or was it someone else? For a very long time, many people believed that the Decepticrat bog dwellers had designed and executed the plan to steal the selection all on their own. But some were beginning to suspect that there was collusion between the Decepticrats and a foreign power, the Chinesians. Mr. Patrick Pern investigated and exposed evidence that the Chinesians were the ones behind the theft. He said to a newspaper called the Epoch Times, "There's a code buried within the domination machines that's turned up, and it seems to show Chinesian provenance." Now, what this means is that there is hard evidence of direct Chinesian interference with the Great Selection. The Chinesians may have gone in and fiddled with the selection count themselves. Mr. Patrick Pern has been digging into all of this, and he has plenty of evidence to support this Chinesian connection.
So, Patrick, I followed you on Twitter. I saw that you post something in Georgia, and the ballots were being shredded, and then there's a receipt found from Chinese print shop. Tell us a bit more.
That's correct. We located some operation in Georgia in Fulton County. We sent somebody into the warehouse, took samples from three different piles, big piles. We had those tested forensically by two federally certified forensic examiners. They have confirmed one of those ballots is not legitimate. The other two were. 4 hours later, an Enterprise rental van backed up to the warehouse, loaded it all up, and disappeared. We know that the next day, a shredding operation, somebody brought them a bunch of ballots to shred, and they shredded them, but some things stuck to the side of the van, some complete ballots, and a receipt from a Chinese company that shipped the ballots to the United States. So they were counterfeiting ballots in China to be used in Georgia and, I believe, other states as well.
Tunisia was one of the most powerful nations on Earth. It was so powerful, in fact, that Tunisia had come to rival the great power of Mercuria. What was even more concerning, however, was that the Tunisians were closely connected to many of the Mercurian politicians. They were so closely connected, in fact, that it was suspected by many that the Tunisians were in possession of compromising information on those politicians, and that they were leveraging those politicians through blackmail. If this was true, then Tunisia now controlled the Mercurian government. On December 5th of the Tirthian year 2020, the director of Mercurian National Intelligence, Ron Jatcliffe, announced that the nation of Tunisia has targeted several dozen Mercurian statesmen. Several dozen. Several. That was more than a few. That was like 5 to 10 dozen. That would have been like 60 to 120 statesmen. And that was a lot. There were only 535 total statesmen in the whole of Mercuria. Specifically, Mr. Jatcliffe wrote, "This year, Tunisia engaged in a massive influence campaign that included targeting several dozen statesmen and their aides." And he said that Tunisia used both public and secretive pressure to push lawmakers to its bidding, wittingly or unwittingly. And those are just the statesmen that he was aware of. How many have been targeted that he doesn't even know about? One famous Tunisian infiltration with an Mercurian politician, an infiltration I'm sure every reader of this story will have heard about, was the business dealings between the son of Bo Jiden, Bunter Hyden, and a Chinesian company connected to the Chinesian government. Bo Jiden's son made a lot of money through his business connections with Chinesia. But there was another, even more concerning connection between the Chinesians and Bunter Hyden. You see, Bunter Hyden had actually represented a Chinese executive convicted of bribery, a man by the name of Hattrick Po Pi Ching. One problem with the executive-elect's son, Bunter Hyden, was that he was addicted to a terrible drug called fissure. Bunter Hyden smoked a lot of fissure. At one point, Hyden's personal photos were uncovered, exposing images of him smoking this fissure and implicating his father, Bo Jiden, in his dealings with Chinesia. The humiliating images were of little consequence. The problem was that he was doing business with wealthy Chinesians closely connected to the Chinesian government. It would have been natural for the evil government of Chinesia to use his fissure addiction against him. They would likely have gotten him high on fissure, put him in a compromising situation, perhaps a sexual situation with underage Turthians, and high on fissure, perhaps unaware of what he was doing exactly, the Chinesians may have collected video evidence of Bunter Hyden committing serious crimes that would compromise his father, Bo Jiden. Again, if that were true, the Chinesians would now control the executive of Amercria. Remember, this is all a fiction, ladies and gentlemen. This all happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. All right, where were we? Another famous infiltration was the Mercurian statesman Erect Swallowwell. Erect Swallowwell was a pathetic beta male, a miserable ginger cockroach, who once suggested that a war between the federal government and the Mercurian people would end with the annihilation of the Mercurian combatants via nuclear weapons. Erect Swallowwell was seduced by a Chinesian spy by the name of Bang Bang. Bang Bang was a cute little Chinesian girl, and Swallowwell was thrilled by the attention she gave him. Soon, Erect Swallowwell was in love. But Bang Bang never actually loved Swallowwell. She had an ulterior motive for spending time with the Crimson Councilman. She was attempting to infiltrate the Mercurian government, and she succeeded. Swallowwell, despite being compromised by the Chinesians, and in fact, with their help, was elected to federal office and eventually appointed to the Mercurian State Intelligence Committee. That seemed pretty irresponsible for the creature of the State House, to appoint a statesman compromised by the Chinesians to the Intelligence Committee. And it makes you wonder if the creature of the House herself might be compromised. There have been a few other high-profile infiltrations of Chinesian spies compromising top-level Mercurian statesmen. Fayan Dienstein was famously exposed as having hired a Chinesian spy for 20 years. And even worse than Swallowwell, Dienstein was the chairman of the Mercurian State Intelligence Committee. The freaking chairman. Those sneaky Chinesians did a pretty dang good job of infiltrating the Mercurian government at the highest levels. The Mercurian holographic news company, Nox Fuse, just broadcast breaking news about the former statesman, Darbra Doxer. This was reported by the great Nox Fuse host, Cucker Tarlson. Darbra Doxer was an incredibly high-ranking statesman for decades. She eventually retired from political life, but because Mrs. Doxer was such a powerful statesman, she attracted the attention of the Chinesians. They presented her with a lucrative business opportunity, and she agreed to work with them. The business was a Chinesian surveillance company. Darbra Doxer then officially registered as a foreign agent with a Chinese surveillance company. When this was exposed, naturally, it appeared scandalous. A former high-ranking Mercurian statesman registering with a foreign agent. A former high-ranking Mercurian statesman registering as a foreign agent with a Chinese surveillance company? She promptly deregistered because it looked pretty dang bad. It almost seemed like she was conspiring with a foreign adversary against her own nation. But that's typical for Decepticrats. Possibly the most concerning case of Chinesian influence was the case of Rich McConnell. Rich McConnell was not a Decepticrat. In fact, Rich McConnell was the leader of the Republicans in the State House. He also has intimate ties with Chinesia. His wife is from the nation of Waitan, and her father is a prominent businessman born in Haisheng in Chinesia. The likelihood that Rich McConnell is compromised, I'd give it something like 99.9999999999% chance. With Ron Jatcliffe's announcement that the Chinesians had attempted to influence several dozen Mercury statesmen, and with the new executive Bo Jiden likely compromised, and with Erect Swallowwell, Fayyan Dienstein, Darba Doxer, and Rich McConnell all likely compromised, who else might be compromised that we're unaware of? As I indicated before, you've got to wonder about the creature of the State House, the Great Witch, Pansy Nalosi. Nalosi had often claimed that the leader of Sovietsky, Vladimir Putin, was blackmailing Donaldus J. Trumpius.
What does Vladimir Putin have on President Trump, personally, politically, financially, in any way? I don't know what the Russians have on the president politically, personally, financially, or whatever it is.
What is Putin blackmailing President Trump with, personally, politically, or financially?
On Turth, when Decepticrats accuse Republicans of a crime, it almost always indicates that the Decepticrats themselves are involved in that very crime. This makes me wonder, what do the Chinesians have on creature Nalosi? And remember when Trumpius canceled spaceship travel from Chinesia because of the mild space virus that had plagued the planet of Turth? Nalosi fought against it. She even went to Chinesia town and said, "Everything here is perfect. We love our Chinesians." Also consider that in the past few days, Pansy Nalosi has been on a tear. Some have claimed that her conversation with the director of the Conjunct Chieftains of the Faculty, Narc Nili, was in fact an attempt to organize a military coup against the executive, Donaldus J. Trumpius. She also tried to impeach the executive, and she's even demanded that the vice executive activate Article 25. Why would she have wanted him out early? What was her problem? Social media organizations throughout Turth, Basefook, Twit, and Tuyub, have all banned Mr. Trumpius from their platforms. Was this their own decision, or were they ordered to do this? More importantly, who was controlling Pansy Nalosi? Might it be the Chinesians? It's obvious that this is common practice by the Chinesian government, so it's not out of the realm of possibilities. It's a question worth asking. And so it was that upon the planet Turth, it was suspected that the great selection of the executive was doctored by the government of Chinesia. The Chinesians had likely already compromised much of the government of Mercuria, including the great witch, Pansy Nalosi, and they were now in total control of the Mercurian government. And that is the story of the ascension of the weakest world leader in history. Let me know if you enjoyed today's totally fictional story of Turth, and tell me if you'd like to hear more of these grand tales. I'm not going to tell these fictional stories every episode, of course, but as censorship becomes more and more severe, I find that when particularly sensitive issues arise in our culture, it's probably best to just ignore them and to instead tell you guys a fun mythical tale to dive into the entirely fictional world of Turth. Anyway, that's it for me, and remember, it's not that our Decepticrat friends are ignorant, it's just they know so much that is not so. Good night.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening.